It's holiday time here at the old incomparable podcasting compound, which means eggnog and Vince Guaraldi and hanging out with Steve under the mistletoe. But I got to thinking about traditions from around the world, like, say, the Feast of St. Lucia, where the young women wear candles in their hair, which seems awfully dangerous. For instance, in France, they say Joyeuse Noël. In Wales, they say Nadolig Flauen. And whenever Erica walks in, we sing Feliz Navidad. But there are a lot more unusual traditions around the world, such as recording a new episode of Turns Out, now with more Glenn. And welcome back to Turns Out. I'm your host, David J. Lohr, and I would like to introduce our liars and our guest for this week. First up, playwright Andy Arthur from Miami. Hello, Andy.
Hello.
And, of course, you all know Moises Chuyan of the Electric Shadow Network. Hello.
Hello.
And our favorite raconteur, podcaster, game changer, game ruiner, Glenn Fleischman.
I'm in it to destroy it, David. Woo-hoo! But only you can hold me back.
Oh, dear. We're doomed. And guessing from among all of our stories this week, our very special guest, host of Welcome to the Uncanny Valley, and I have already forgotten the other show because I didn't make my notes.
It's called Three Nerd Things.
Three Nerd Things. That was Kelly Gamont. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, David.
Our theme this week is holiday traditions from around the world. Not everybody has eggnog and chestnuts by an open fire. Well, we have a couple of stories, and Kelly's going to try and figure out which one of them is true. Why don't we start with Glenn Fleischman?
Are you sure?
I'm sure. I want to get the ruining out right ahead of time.
We'll have time to recover.
I dare you, Glenn. I dare you. Try to out-ruin me.
I'm supposed to guess which story is correct.
No, you're supposed to eat the bug. All right. And then...
I've got my cherry cucaracha pop here, and I'm all set.
And then Joe Rogan has you do something even more extreme.
I have a story. I have a story, and it's true. So we all know about the festival in Africa, in the Sahel Desert of the Wadabi people. And you know about it because it's shown on National Geographic specials, and there's photographs of it and so forth, because it's sort of unique, right? This is the true part. The whole thing's true, but this is the truest of the true part. This is the one you've seen where men paint their faces and they dress up and then they do these dances. And this is a big festival they have to attract a bride. And women pick the man that dances best for them. And that's how it works, right? But it's not unique that you have these marriage festivals. The circumstances are because in northern Finland, there is a marriage festival which coincides with winter solstice. So it's a twofer. It's a holiday in which people agree to marry. It's already pretty cold by winter solstice in northern Finland. So people are very excited about the potential of gaining a body partner's body heat, even with modern electric furnaces and baseboard heaters. So the holiday marriage festival originally required men to show their prowess at catching seals, skinning them, preparing the meat as rapidly and skillfully as possible. Because that's, of course, important. You're seafaring people. You need to get your sources of protein where you can and show that you're a good provider. Women would evaluate mates. Now, the women also showed off an array of skills, including like how they made quilts and fur bedding. They could demonstrate some of their domestic ability again because of the cold. Few people left this celebration without finding a partner because when everybody smells like rotten seal, nobody smells bad to anyone else. It's a good, you know, the great leveler, rotten seal smell. So the modern version still exists. If you go to northern Finland in the winter, which, you know, if you're into darkness, it's a great place to be. Bonfires, it's a great time. Staged partly for tourists, but the residents, you know, the locals still come. And it's a lot more commercial because they're selling goods now, of course, to, you know, those coming through. But for some more remote villages, it's still a way to let young people meet and arrange some long-term canoodling. And that's how they get through the winter in northern Finland.
Wow. Okay, so I have one quick question.
Of course.
So if the women...
I've got the fact book open in front of me. I can answer any question about this festival you want.
Okay, well, we'll see. if the women are adjudicating the men's prowess at hunting and skinning and all that, would that be an approval of seals?
It's not a diet of worms, that's for sure.
But okay.
It might be an approval of seals.
Now, I should say, Kelly, you can interrogate each of us after the story.
That's right.
So if there's anything you want to try and trip him up with.
The approval of seals.
Glenn, did you really think that you were going to get through any single podcast with David with zero puns?
I have a whalebone to pick with you, I think.
Mm.
I was going to say how impressed I was with David channeling his inner Glenn.
Ah.
So how many different kinds of these festivals are there?
Are you asking David or me? I don't know how many kinds of festivals
I'm asking you, Glenn.
Wait, kinds of these? Oh, how many instances of them are there?
Well, like, all across this stretch of the continent, or...
Well, it's very local, it's regional, northern Finland. There's different traditions in southern Finland, of course, because they have, you know, different climate, different outlook on life. But in northern Finland, you know, people are hanging out with reindeer, Laplanders. They get together, it's very tribal still, there's small villages, and of course there's modern conveniences, but the traditions go way back, so tribes would all meet, different groups of them together. In different parts of northern Finland. I mean, you couldn't get everybody together. It was very cold. Some things were impassable. So there could be many of them spanning across where folks met up with the reindeer.
Okay.
Nobody killed a reindeer at this festival. I'm going to tell you that. No. That comes later. That comes later. Later in the winter.
Any more questions, or are you ready for another story?
No, I'm good.
All right. All right. Let's move on to Andy's story.
All right, so this is another story that takes place sort of in winter solstice, and it's the ancestor tradition of a tradition that we actually know and love, which is handing out milk and cookies to Santa. But I did research, and I was like looking into how that started, and in Celtic, specifically some Scottish fairy lore, the idea is that the queen of the fairies, which if you know anything about fairy lore, they're always particularly mean and kind of crafty and evil, in that sort of Disney villainess kind of way, would go out on winter solstice and take one person from the local sort of village. The sort of story is she would take one person and keep them with her for 100 years and a day. And then release them back into the world. And so people would be sort of completely out of time in the world. The way you would avoid this is you would put milk out for the fairies, for the queen of the fairies, because if she had milk, she could use it as sort of a beauty preference to keep herself looking young and be okay. And sort of, so it's sort of like Celtic Passover, as it were. So you're preventing her taking you with her to her sort of secret evil fairy place on Midwinter's Eve. And this actually, there's some variants on it where it's the devil comes out when you get closer to a Christian ideology. The devil comes out every, you know, on Christmas Eve and selects one person to go with them to hell and for 100 years and a day. And you just sort of put out something like milk and some sweets. And that's, you know, and that over time stuff gets bastardized, and that's why we hand out milk and cookies to Santa.
Ah. I should point out that fairy lore is a distant cousin of mine.
Okay. Of course.
I'm just saying, I'm not making that up. I'm seriously. I looked it up.
You're on fire tonight. You're like a Yule log, David.
I'm like a Yule log. I am a Yule log. I feel very Steve Letzian right now. I don't know why. I don't even have a spreadsheet. This is odd. Anyway, okay, any questions or?
No.
All right. Wow, you're good. You're good.
I'm with it.
All right. All right. Well, I'm going to go next so we can save the best for last.
I can't wait to hear Bennett Cerf's story.
You've got no idea. It's wonderful. It's a story that Johnny Carson told me over dinner the other day.
Okay. Well, goats are big in Scandinavia. I mean, in Finland, you know, it's funny Glenn should bring up Finland. You have Joulupukki. That literally translates as Yule goat. Originally, it was an actual goat as part of mythology and Wotan and all this. And over the centuries, Joulupukki has evolved into something like Santa. Although he doesn't sneak around in chimneys or anything. He instead knocks on the door and comes in to play games with the well-behaved children of the house. which, you know, that's kind of nice. But of course, you don't want to play too hard because you know what they say, let the YOLO Pookie win. But of course.
What you did there.
I see it. Yeah.
Yes. Understood that reference? I did.
Anyway. Of course, in Scandinavia, there is no bigger goat than the Javlebakken. On or about the first day of Advent in the city of Javla, Sweden, they erect a giant version of the traditional straw Yule goat, and they place it in the town square. The first one was built in 1966. It was about 43 feet tall, 23 feet long, and weighed 3 tons. Unfortunately, the goat burned down on New Year's Eve, and the perpetrator was arrested and convicted. It's okay. Fortunately, the goat was insured. But in the last 50 years, the annual goat has been burned or destroyed 35 times. Like Sisyphus, they keep building giant goats every year. If it's destroyed before the Feast of St. Lucy, they rebuild it. They've had security guards. Some of them have gotten bribed. They've had webcams. Some of them have gotten hacked. Once, someone tried to airlift the goat to Stockholm by helicopter. And 1 year...
Get to the chopper!
And 1 year, two people dressed as Santa Claus and a gingerbread man set the goat on fire with flaming arrows from a distance.
Run.
Sorry. Now, in researching this, and this, I did a lot of research because, you know, flaming goat. I found
my favorite
a site.
Cartoon by Bob, what's his name, Barrowman?
Yeah. I found a site in Swedish with a timeline recounting every goat and how it fared. And thanks to the translation powers of Google Chrome, we wind up with entries such as 1979, goat was burned before it was even posted. New built and impregnated, also sabotaged and broken. 1992, burned for 8 days. Even Vasa school burned the same night. Rebuilt, but burned. 1999, burning hours of the goat erection. In 2001, the goat was burnt down by a 51-year-old visitor from the U.S., who was convicted and ordered to pay 100,000 kroner in damages. The court confiscated his cigarette lighter with the argument that clearly he was not able to handle it. He countered that he was, quote, no goat burner, unquote.
Wait, how many kroner was this again?
100,000.
Sure it wasn't a 100,000 boner? Kroner?
I mean, hey, wait, what? You're stuck on the goat erection, aren't you?
Well, I think anybody would be.
He countered in court that he was no goat burner, and he believed that he was taking part in a completely legal goat burning tradition.
Kind so of he's a goat burning.
There.
Are you saying he's a goat burning man?
Well, no. See, that's the thing. After he was released from jail, he returned to the U.S. without paying his fine. Wait, I'm sorry. Just since I've been reading this, the count is now 36. This year's goat burned down just hours after it opened.
Oh my god.
I want to make some sort of Trojan horse joke with this goat thing, and I can't figure out what it is, and it's driving me nuts.
So, Sweden don't need no water. Let that mother gobble burn?
Yeah, apparently.
Is that where we're at?
Apparently.
Okay.
So, all right, let's finish up with Moises's story.
So,
whatever voice you want.
Hey, I live out loud. I live in the open. You know, in case you don't know, I am in fact Cuban American. If you couldn't tell by my propensity for talking about baseball or the volume of my speech, and the death of Castro just got me thinking. If I'm going to talk about some sort of a holiday tradition, what better thing to do than to go to Santeria, something that Castro hated so much. He almost hated it as much as he hated his own people. If you're not familiar with Santeria beyond Sublime's song that says, in fact, I don't practice Santeria, I ain't got no crystal ball. Well, look, who can blame you? That song was on the top 40 charts for far, far too long in a just world. In case you're not familiar with it at all, Santeria is an old world religion. It's full of symbolism.
It's practiced throughout much of the Caribbean, including Cuba and including Puerto Rico. It originated with the Yoruba people of Africa in what's today known as Nigeria. And where I'm getting to with this is that this is a religion that adapted very well to the New World, where everything had to somehow shift toward Catholicism. The Yoruba religion, it quickly developed into what is now called Santeria. The Yorubas were expected to adopt Catholicism, the religion of their masters, and they were able to make that transition pretty easily because Santeria is a worship of sub-deities. And going from that to worshiping saints who had their own days, where the sub-deities had their own feast days, easy thing to do. In fact, one of their sub-deities, Obatala, corresponds to Our Lady of Mercy. Now, the general thing about Santeria, there's one head god with many sub-deities. There's an org chart, that kind of a thing. The deities are called Orishas. The Orishas are said to have descended from heaven to help and console their followers. And Orishas aren't chosen by the people. You don't go, okay, I'm going to draft pick this guy. They choose you. So the Orisha watches over you. They've got various symbols, colors, numbers, characteristics. There are links in other religions to this kind of series of corresponding things. I guess you would say the religious version of a state bird or a state motto or a state shrub, that kind of a thing. Each of them have their own little aspects. To use Our Lady of Mercy, Obatala, for example, Obatala's color is white. His number is 8. His day of the week is Thursday. He's got 24 different attributes. He covers all white foods. He doesn't drink alcohol. And he rules over all things that are white. Bones, skulls, that kind of thing. Mountains and hills, also something that he covers. And Obatala was the first Orisha created. He's the god of peace and purity. He specializes in helping great thinkers, including scientists, doctors, lawyers. And his day of feast is September 24th. And that yearly holiday, like I said, is kind of like a saint's day to Catholics. But I'm not here to talk about Obatala. I'm talking about one of Obatala's siblings, I guess you would say. The Orisha Pegalo. And Pegalo is the Orisha of shame, regret, and penance. And the reason that I bring up Pegalo is because his feast day, comes here in these late winter months, which some crazy Western pagan types would call, you know, the winter solstice time, that kind of a thing. And the feast day is set for the last Sunday before the last full week of the year. Because the feast day of Pegalo is unique in that it is an opportunity to air grievances about yourself, about those that you love, to get it all out in the open, to purge all of it, one big, huge, cathartic release. And one of the things that that people like to associate Santeria with, that they associate with voodoo, with other I guess you would say dark-skinned religions, as the whites like to consider them, is animal sacrifice. And generally in Santeria, something like a chicken sacrifice is something that happens when a santero, a practitioner of the religion, Santeria's version of priests, when they are inducted into that order. Generally, it's withheld for that, but this is the one feast day in which animal sacrifice is part of the deal. Now, as usual, whole feast is prepared. Beautiful food, delicious, rich, wonderful things. Everything's laid out on the table, and then 3 chickens are let loose, caught, heads cut off at the necks, and the blood of the chickens is drained out over all of the food. And then all of the food is ceremonially burned because everyone should be ashamed of the amount of privilege and entitlement that they've shown throughout the last year to their loved ones, to strangers, to people they know kind of okay, kind of like how I know Glenn Fleischman. And so at the end of this feast day, you have an opportunity to have atoned for everything, spoken out against yourself, spoken out against the sins of others. It's just shame, shame, shame. It's a celebration of shame. And then you have a full week left of the year to reflect on that and make the next year a better one. And that is the feast day of the Orisha Pegalo.
And that's what Pegalo is all about, Charlie Brown. So, okay. Any questions for Moises or Are you still on it?
I'm just going to drain the blood out of a chicken, okay?
Okay.
And do a prayer to Babaluaye.
Okay. Can
you got it, man.
Can I be on the show, Ricky? No?
David, you can't be on the show.
Damn it.
I tell you 1,000 times why you buy these dresses. You got some splaining to do.
Ricky!
No.
Okay, so to recap for our listeners, with Glenn, we have the overwhelming stench of dead seals.
Thank you. It's my calling card.
Which inexplicably leads to love.
Well, and I was going to tell you about his story.
If everyone stinks, nobody stinks. That's how it works.
That's right. It's an equalizer. And we have Andy's story of fairy lore, not related, and my flaming goat erection, and Moises's Santeria clause. Aww.
My flaming goat erection is the name of my David Lohr cover band. Sorry, there wasn't enough pollen storm in this podcast.
Yeah, well, you know, there never is, really.
Oh dear.
So, do any of those sound appealing or at least plausible?
Appealing, heavens no.
Happy holidays, everyone.
Nothing but horrible people.
It's beginning to look a lot like.
Well, now I know how I got invited. It makes a lot more sense. So I know just enough about Santeria to know that Pagata was a thing. The feast day I don't know about. The goat erection I do know about. I'm not going to admit how.
Hey.
We don't ask questions here. It's okay.
Hey, Kelly. We all got to have interests, okay? Sometimes they take very strange forms. Dos dulce de leche, please.
Some of us like wicker men. Some of us like flaming goat erections.
Not the goats.
The goats. So that leaves. So the goats are a thing. I don't know about the feast day.
But you're worried I have done a blood sacrifice and I curse you.
Well, I wasn't until you said that, and now I kind of am.
I'm sorry. It's okay. Not in my control.
It's how he starts all the podcasts. Yeah, really.
It makes sense. I understand. I don't know a lot about the mating rituals in northern Norwegia,
Northern Finland.
Northern Lapland.
Yes,
in Lapland. Not Norway. That's a totally different thing.
Yeah, in Norway, it's sea lions.
This is true, but Norwegia is fun to say.
Actually, it's not sea lions. They're considered otters, okay? So
you otter be ashamed of yourself.
Oh, dear.
Thank you for saving me the effort on that.
You're welcome.
I'm trying to figure out who... Because I don't know much about the fairy one, and I don't know about the mating rituals of Northern Finland. But Northern Finland somehow sounds weirdly legit, so I'm going to say, oddly, of all of them, that it's the fairy story that's the lie.
Well, only one of them is true.
See, so
you have to figure out which one is true.
Oh, the goats.
Kelly, yeah,
the goat erection. The goat erection is legit.
Flaming goat erection is true. That is right.
Yes. Yeah. It turns out, Kelly, yeah, you think Pegalo is a thing? No, it's just a mispronunciation of the Spanish word for hit him.
Which is...
From where I'm sitting, it sounds like like one that I actually had heard of.
It sounds like someone like Ogun, the Orisha of strength, endurance, and perseverance. Oya, the Orisha of death and rebirth. Osanian, the Orisha of deciduous vegetation. Yes, there's a sub-deity of deciduous vegetation.
Is there one of non-deciduous vegetation?
No. Non-deciduous vegetation can just go jump off a cliff. Let's see. Ocean, the Orisha of passion and fertility. Ogun, self-reliance and industrious labor. Not industrial, but industrious. Huh. Ochosi, animals. Babaluaye, the guardian of the disabled. And Elewa, the
intercessor. Ricardo.
Well, yeah. And Elewa is the intercessor and ruler of destinies.
Sweden is weird because here's the other thing that is true about the site of the Flaming Goat Erection. Mm-hmm. You know those weird but oddly delicious little car candies that you can buy at IKEA in the red bag? They come from the same place.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about something strange and delicious that was going to get us an explicit tag.
Well, not yet, but I mean, it's early.
The night is young. The nice thing about IKEA, you can get your Flaming Goat Erection flat packed. It's great. You just need an Allen wrench.
It's awesome.
A very specific Allen wrench that you can only get in one place.
Yeah. It only fits in one place. Thank you.
Live in Portland. We have stores for that everywhere.
Are they locally sourced? Do the Allen wrenches suffer?
You have to make it yourself, though. You go and you build the mold. You pour the steel. It's all involved.
Actually, I went into a music store recently here, and they had one of those little, like five-sided aquariums with the open top, you know?
And
it was full of Allen wrenches. And on the front, they had taped a sign where someone in big letters had written, "Free Allen wrenches." And then below that, it said, "He didn't do anything wrong."
That's good. That's good.
Free Allen wrenches. He didn't do anything wrong.
That
he
is just very kinda, Glenn.
He went one too many turns to the left.
I think it's better than me.
First rule of comedy. Know your audience.
No. Oh, dear. Okay. Well, you have correctly sussed out the goats.
Hooray!
So, hooray. Merry Christmas for that. And now we have the lightning round where everybody gets to play.
Oh, Lord.
This is the 12 days of lightning round. We have 12 strange and unusual holiday traditions. You guys have to figure out, are they true or are they false? Or are they kind of true or kind of false?
Okay.
So, number one, on the first day.
How do we respond, though? How do we respond?
Well, true or false?
Acclamation? Acclamation?
Yeah. I mean, you just call out what you think and, you know, consensus.
Is there a second on the floor?
Yeah. Okay, on the first day of lightning round, in Slovakia, the head of the household takes a large spoonful of loksa pudding and flings it at the ceiling. The more pudding that sticks, the more luck they will have in the new year. True or false?
True.
Sounds like pudding on the ceiling.
They also do this in the Ukraine with kutia pudding.
Yeah, it sounds Eastern European enough. Why not?
Yeah, why not?
And you just leave it there. It's like spackle. You leave it there. It hardens for the next year. You just keep judiciously applying it. And eventually you've got another coat.
But is this how we keep roof from leaking?
Well, you know, in some parts of the country.
Reminds me, I put some pudding in the bathroom right now.
Sometimes you need to do the pudding in the bathroom.
Wasn't that a song in the 80s? Pudding in the bathroom, please don't shine.
You kind of want it to be, right?
It wouldn't be any weirder than the stuff I actually did listen to in the 80s, to be sure.
In the two turtle doves position, the tradition of the Christmas pickle.
Is that code?
Not a euphemism.
What can I say? That's one of my favorite ones.
But this is where I put the Christmas pickle. The tradition of hiding a pickle-shaped ornament.
If I could put my Christmas pickle there, I'd never leave the house.
Is it wrong if you hold it or you need to hang it?
Hey, well, you know. The hiding a pickle-shaped ornament somewhere in the tree for one of the children to find and bring them luck or the honor of opening the first present began in 1893 as the invention of pickle pioneer Darko Vlasic, which translates from the Croatian as gift pickle, when a pickle accidentally wound up in his tree and he sent his children to find it.
False.
False. Oh, my God.
I say thee nay.
Very, very good. It did.
In honor of Kevin Meaney, RIP, I say nay, nay.
It did begin in the 1890s, but it was when Woolworths imported a large shipment of glass-blown ornaments shaped like vegetables from Germany. They made up the tradition in order to sell the ornaments.
No.
Yep.
No, that's amazing.
Yep.
Sometimes a glass just needs to get blown.
But I will say Darko is Croatian for gift.
What's that?
Yeah. In number three, if you have kiviak at your meal in Greenland, that's a dish made by stuffing 500 dead auks, feathers, beaks, and all, into a seal skin and letting them ferment for 7 months. Apparently,
what's it called? Oh, sorry.
Kiviak.
Kiviak? Kiviak.
Apparently when opened, the fermented auks smell like Stilton cheese and taste delightful.
Now, I know, wait, in where? Iceland or Greenland?
Greenland.
Greenland. Now, I know that people eat fermented, postulated, sorry, not postulated, that's not the right word. It's, what's the right word? Putrefied, that's it. But I don't know if that's the right one. I'm going to say false myself. There are things like that, but I don't think it's ox.
Anyone else?
In the name of all that's holy, I'm going false.
I'm with her.
And I second all of the aforementioned senators' motions. False.
I'm sad to say it is horrifically true.
Oh, no.
But I am just going to take their word for it. I'm not going there.
See, I know about in Iceland, they eat something called piston shark, which is you bury shark in the permafrost and you put uric acid on it and it ferments for many months. And then it smelled, my Icelandic friend said, it smells like death and you eat it and, you have the breath of death afterwards and you drink aquavit.
It smells aquavit's like death. Disgusting. Here, you try it.
How does that help?
Aquavit's terrible. Why they drink agavit? Because they want to set the insides on fire?
That's right, exactly. That's exactly it. You need something very,
don't sit near
very strong afterwards. It reminds me, I've got some Branabind in my freezer right now. Yeah, but I do not have any pissed on shark.
One of my favorite stories told by an undergrad friend who'd just come back from studying abroad in exotic Spain was, oh my gosh, they have this poop cheese there? What they do is they take cheese and they put it inside of poop, and it tastes amazing. I thought it was going to be disgusting, but it was delicious.
Is that a version of mortadella?
Sure, whatever that is.
Did he make that up?
Glenn, you eating a poop cheese?
Did he make that up?
Cheese, but the wrong.
No,
end.
I didn't make that up. It's apparently.
No. Did he make that up? Did someone pull a prank on him?
No, it was a she. It was a lady.
And no one will pull a prank on a lady.
No.
Poop cheese may taste like pumpkin pie, but I'll never know.
No, the people ate the poop cheese right in front of them.
Kelly, are you a 1940s? Wow. Are you a 1940s hard boiled detective, lady? What it sounds like.
I was failing at Jules from Pulp Fiction because I didn't want to go all the way with it and end up with an explicit tag.
Well, now, lady, that did kind of work. Lady, give it to me straight. You been into poop cheese?
Poop cheese may taste like pumpkin pie, but I'll never know because I'll never eat the filthy mother. Shut your mouth.
Yeah. Honest, Whitey, I never touch this stuff.
You know what they call it in France? No, anyway.
you know, I'm sorry. I can't watch that movie anymore. They killed one of Glenn's friends in that movie. It's, spoiler alert!
You preempted my Glenning!
Yeah, I know. Oh, I know. It's the new. It's everyone's new favorite sport.
Oh, Glenn my Block. God. We could totally do that.
Pre-Glenning!
Glenn Block?
Yes. Yes.
I like to buzz
Glenn,
in with the block.
Glenn blocking.
Why let Glenn do his garbage talking? Why not talk some garbage yourself?
Please tell me that I can take Paul Lynde for the Glenn Block.
Oh, absolutely.
Well, I could, but I don't know if I'd survive. These damn kids. Oh, why do people procreate in the first place?
Okay. The Linding Rod.
Somewhere Jason just fell out of his chair and he doesn't know why. He just knows. He senses that something has gone horribly off the rails. Happened?
Don't make me tell you what a triple Lindy is. Oh,
we could have the all Paul Lynde panel, I think, given the voice talent on the comic
book.
That
would be amazing.
Number four.
There's more?
In the Ukraine.
Oh, God.
In the Ukraine, they hide spider webs in their Christmas trees. True or false?
True.
Why would they do that?
True.
True.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
To me, that sounds terrifying.
It's one way to forget Putin exists. something so terrifying that you can't think about the real world around you.
Some pig.
No. Oh.
It is in fact true. The legend goes that a poor woman did not have enough money to decorate her tree for her family, so she let the spider decorate it. And in the morning, when the first light hit the web, it turned into gold and silver, and they never had want again.
She was dead of spider venom, but it was still...
Yeah, but it was totally
worth it. The rest of the family did fine.
I mean, it's a sacrifice. You know, do what you gotta do. In the five golden rings position... In Caracas?
No, no. Oh, we need that to be a Miss Piggy five gold rings.
Oh. I was thinking of an Eddie Izzard.
What? I can't do Piggy.
Yes.
I can do Ralph the Dog.
The Piggy one just ends with.
I can do Ralph the Dog, but I can't. Yeah.
I mean, I can totally do Kermit the Frog.
Oh my God.
Well, then we do the Muppet Show. We're like Jim Henson doing Kermit the Frog.
Miss Valerie Harper. Yay!
You sound more like Brian Henson when he started doing Kermit the Frog.
Oh my God.
We could totally do dueling Kermit the Frogs.
That is the worst adaptation of Deliverance, by the way.
This is transitioning Smokes. From Turns Out to Make Kelly Squeal.
Oh, well, yeah.
Hot new game show.
Oh, my God.
Oh, hey, Ned Beatty, squeal get like Kelly, a pig.
Woo! Kelly, Georgia Dow, Lisa Schmeiser, and Make Me Squeal, and that'll be the program.
My God, that would be brilliant. That comes right after Glenn Block in the afternoon.
Glenn Block, followed by
Make Him Squeal. Okay, in number five.
Just so I'm clear, it's Perry Mason and then Glenn Block and then Make Me Squeal.
Yes, but it's the 1970s Perry Mason with Monty Markham. It's not the same.
No!
You know.
No.
Well, that's just undignified.
So it's not Perry Mason.
In Caracas, Venezuela, they close the roads in the days before Christmas and hold a roller derby competition in the church squares.
True.
False.
I want it to be true.
It is true. They roller skate to church.
I want to believe in a new Venezuela that believes in a jammer's rights.
Well, the roller derby part is false, but they do in fact roller skate to church. And the children tie long pieces of string to their big toes and dangle the string out of the windows for the roller skaters to tug on as they pass by.
That's
I don't know why.
And it turns out that roller skating to church was a mid-80s adult contemporary hit for Mandy Patinkin.
Roller
skating to church.
You can't roller skate in a buffalo herd. Number six.
I tried to get in there.
Number six. In 2005, Barcelona's city council commissioned a nativity scene which did not include a Caganer, I'm not really sure on the pronunciation, a figure of an older man with his pants down around his ankles doing his business. This caused an uproar and was called an attack against Catalonian tradition, but the city council claimed it would violate a law banning public defecation and urination. True or false?
I'm going false.
It's probably not, because if it's public defamation, urination, it's a figure. It's not actually doing it. It can be public indecency, but...
Where'd you say again? Barcelona.
Barcelona.
Jesus Christ.
I'm from Barcelona.
I'm firing you from this company.
Yeah, I'm just going to Sondheim to Sondheim.
I know nothing.
How do you say? Oh, yes.
If that is a crime, I don't know what is.
I'm not
another 100 Moises
just
got off of the bus.
I don't know.
I am not throwing away my shot.
There's 100 Moises in there, and they all
and
got
100,000 references just got off of the bus and are looking at us and saying, oh my God, they're still going, and it's not all of us.
So true
and
or false?
I've run out of rhymes.
True or false?
I say false. False!
It is, believe it or not, true. And in 2006, the Caganer was restored in all his glory. Supposedly, he symbolizes the fertilization of the earth, and even the Catholic Church allows them in their nativity scene.
Interesting. Well, he'll be portrayed by Donald Trump this year, so it'll all be good.
Well, I had that one, but now I'm in agony.
They do make them in popular figures, too. So you can get like an Albert Einstein one and a Darth Vader one. So I'm sure there's a Donald Trump one already.
I know about the mannequin.
The verb cagar conjugates to something that gives you an explicit tag.
I know about the...
No, it has to do with the secondary form of excretion, I think.
This is the country with the poop cheese. Yeah. I mean, come on.
Yes.
In Brussels, which we haven't mentioned yet, Brussels has the mannequin piss, which is a tiny little boy peeing into every fountain.
It's
the original model for that, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
We had lots of naughty boy figures that you could get little tiny porcelain ones where you'd pour water in the head and it would do that. It would just be like a mini fountain that you could carry around. We had them in the doll museum.
The model for Calvin and Hobbes, the Calvin sticker that's on the back of every truck in Florida.
Number seven.
Sorry, Florida.
And also Texas.
The Jólakötturin, or Yule Cat, prowls the hills in Iceland. Those who don't receive new clothes for Christmas will be devoured by the cat. True or false?
I like it. I'm going true.
I think parents say it's true.
Start the tradition if it doesn't exist.
Yeah. I'm down.
Yes.
It is true. I think this legend was discovered by an Icelandic clothing company. But it's really about working or being lazy. The idea is that only lazy people wouldn't need new clothes. So Yule Cat is culling the herd.
All right. I'm with it.
Number eight. In Japan, the most popular meal at Christmas is namahage, a type of sushi invented on a holiday episode of Iron Chef, believe it or not, served with salmon, avocado, and salmon roe, dusted with edible gold leaf, then passed through a curtain of smoke from frankincense. In certain restaurants, it is the most expensive holiday dish in the world, and the derivation of the name translates literally as fire rash peeling. True or false?
I'm going to let everybody else go first.
Coward.
No, I'm not a coward. I have my answer.
Oh.
I say false. I'm probably wrong.
I think it's probably true. It sounds like the exact sort of thing that would be true.
It's weird enough and also Japanese enough to be true.
I'll go with Kelly. I don't have an opinion. I'm sorry.
It's absolutely false. A namahage is a kind of oni.
It's also a man who wears an ogre mask at the end of year festivities and threatens to beat the lazy children with his stick. but it does translate it from fire rash peeling because it referred to people who sat too close to the fire doing nothing and getting blisters.
There's like a thing to this laziness thing going on.
Right? For a bonus, do you want to know what the actual most popular Christmas meal in Japan is?
The Tears of the West?
Natto.
The last I heard, it was a bucket of chicken.
That's Natto. Exactly right.
Get a bucket of chicken!
It's so popular that families pre-ordered their KFC meals, and it is KFC. It's not just chicken.
Oh, yeah.
It's totally
KFC. To be
KFC.
Sure, it's not a bucket. It's the bucket.
You have to order it in advance.
I was trying to look up this festival in Japan which people die regularly, and I found the wrong one. There's apparently multiple ones, and it's called the Onbashira Festival, and it's the most dangerous religious festival, so there are more than one. Someone died just a few months ago in it. It shows people riding like a log down a hillside, holding onto a rope or something. It looks a little only held every 6 years, fatalities every time. It's a lot of fun.
It does sound like Kentucky. I'll give it that.
I feel a little better knowing we're not the only country with a population whose attitude is, hold my beer and watch this.
Yeah. Well, the thing that kills me about this is they actually have buckets that say, you know, they're specially done for the holidays, and it just says, Kentucky Christmas. And
pretty soon, we're going to outdo Japan in every way possible.
You'll
we're
be so
have
tired
all the most lethal holiday traditions.
We do.
Everyone's going to die. It's going to be great.
I just want to say, living like 3 miles from the Kentucky border, you need a lot more bourbon and buckshot for a Kentucky Christmas.
Yeah, you do.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Number nine. We're almost done. In Stockholm, Julbocken is a spiced barley wine featuring happy dancing goats on the bottle. Being a barley wine, it takes a little over a year to age, but moments to savor. As the song says, when it's time to relax, this Yule, take note. If you'll have the time, we've got your goat. Let it be Julbocken.
False.
There's only so many true goat stories you can David, tell on the podcast.
Look, David,
true
I like
Swedish.
You. David, I
true
like
Swedish
you.
Swedish goat stories.
You're very proficient at this. I'm a big fan, but here's the thing. This is bullshit. It's not real. I can smell it from a mile away.
It is actually true or false.
What?
But Julbocken does translate as Christmas goat.
Yeah. You just
you
had
made
to
up
slide
that
cross promotion
in for radio drama.
Of course. Number 10, and I'm guessing Moises will get this right. The Tio de Nadal in Catalonia is a hollowed-out log decorated with a face and a blanket, then fed with sweets, candies, and nuts in the days before Christmas. It is then placed halfway into a fire and beaten with sticks until its treats pop out.
This is true. I've heard about this on another radio show.
I say this is true, but I don't know why you think that I would know something about a Catalan tradition when I'm Cuban and have zero connection to Spain.
Because you already know about the poop cheese.
Oh, that's right.
That's right.
That's right.
This is in fact
the transitive property of the poop cheese.
That's right. Well, because the last thing to come out is normally a garlic bulb, onion, sometimes a salt herring. But his name is the poop log. He is known as the poop log. And as they beat it with sticks, the families sing songs like, "If you don't poop well, I will hit you with a stick, poop log."
Look, I just think that there's something to be learned here. I mean, so many of these traditions have to do with pooping and walking a lot.
Maybe it's pooping and laziness.
Walking a lot is something that we should all be doing more of.
You know, they celebrate this on Vulcan. They say poop, log, and prosper.
Oh. Number 11.
My God, there's more?
In the Czech...
I saw
it. In the Czech Republic, it is considered good luck to find a peeled almond in your shoe. If the almond is facing towards your front door, you will be married by the following Christmas.
How do you just randomly get peeled almonds in one shoe?
It's the Czech Republic. I don't know.
Can we go and find out if the last one was fake?
Oh, no, it's true.
No, it's absolutely true.
The poop log is totally true.
It's true.
Okay.
I heard about it in a cultural program.
Uncle Poop Log. Christmas poop.
Uncle Poop Log.
Throw the Yule log on.
John Crickfalusi was onto something all those years ago with commercials for log, is what I'm hearing.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, it's true.
Yep.
It's log. It's big. Heavy. Wood.
It's big. It's heavy. It's wood. Yeah.
It's better than bad.
It's better than bad. It's good.
I think the almond one is not true.
Yeah, I say almonds are false.
It doesn't sound like a Czech Republican tradition or a Czech Slovakian tradition.
That is true. It is false. Swedes will hide a peeled almond in rice pudding, and unmarried Czech women will fling a shoe over their shoulder. But in either case, if you find the almond, or if the shoe lands pointing towards your front door, you'll be married within the year. But two separate traditions.
Is there a refund if you're not? That's the
well, you know, back? You
get
know,
almonds back or
yeah. And finally, finally, the one with all the hard-to-pronounce words. In the Welsh town of Llangynoed, they celebrate the new year with the wassailing tradition of Mari Lloyd, or Grey Mare. It is the skull of a horse at the end of a stick, decorated with a sheet and flowers. It's paraded through the town, led by the horse, and the people in the party ask to enter houses and pubs with songs in the hopes of getting food and drink.
Now, wait, wait, wait. The horse is led by its own desiccated skull?
Well, they're sort of costumed, right? But it's the skull at the front.
Sounds plausible because of the whole Morris tradition there and the hobby horse.
I don't know. The Welsh have a long tradition of dragons on flags.
Is Doctor Who involved in this? Because it's in Wales?
Cardiff,
I have known enough Welsh people to tell you this is probably legit.
Yeah, it sounds so true. Welsh. The only thing that's missing is some sort of singing accompaniment.
No, they wassail. Yeah.
Well, they're singing. They're
oh,
singing
okay, okay, yeah, all right, there we go. Yeah, that's totally true then. Yeah, there we go.
Ticks all
the Welsh boxes.
So, it is true, though the old Mary Lloyd isn't what it used to be.
Oh!
I knew that was coming. I knew that was coming.
You did there.
It's a meme.
It checks the Welsh box. You know, you can get a Welsh box sent to you every month from the new Welsh box.
Well, but I thought, what about Welsh Crate?
They're
what's occurring
this
on your doorstep every month?
You get leek. You get a leek.
Fifth day of the month, right there.
Yeah, you get Welsh you get a box. Dylan Thomas poem.
You get pickled
wrapped in Welsh flank.
Pickled flower buds.
Yeah,
and
some griffins.
And the wrapping paper kissed by Ewan Griffith.
You get a Funko Pop griffin 1 month. You get a Beanie Baby griffin. It's kind of cool. if you like Griffins.
The entire set of all the DVDs for Torchwood.
All consonants.
And you know it's authentic because every Welsh box, you open it up, there's a picture of Rob Brydon right there.
Ah.
I'm making so many Welsh jokes. I've not made a Michael Sheen joke yet, but I've covered most of the Welsh bases.
You know what's the beauty of the Rob Brydon picture? Before you open it, you hear him inside going, that's a joke for the Rob Brydon fans.
So does anybody win? That's my question on this show.
Nobody wins. Nobody. The listeners get the closest to winning.
Does anybody care?
So thank you for listening to Turns Out this week. I would like to thank my guests, Andy Arthur. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad we finally made the
Yes. Work. And Moises Chuyan and all of the little voices in his head that are now in all of ours.
Oh my goodness, thank you for having me.
Is that Bennett Cerf?
Oh god, that was Ed Wynn.
No.
What's wrong with you?
Was that Bennett Cerf?
No, I'm sorry. I just got back in from having dinner the other day with what's happened? Oh god, I'm having a stroke.
And for all you listeners, I'm curious to know how many of you know who Bennett Cerf is. So please write to us here at Bennett Cerf Voice, care of Radio City Music Hall. And I would like to thank our...
It's my pleasure to be sitting in this week for Mr. John Daly as your host.
If you're not careful, I'm going to break out my Dorothy Kilgallen. And I would like to thank Kelly Gamont for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a wonderful time.
And Glenn Fleischman, thank you for coming.
It's a pleasure, and I'm glad this time I was not the person who ruined the show. I think, David, it may have been you who ruined the show.
Yes! Sure. See, I win. There you go. You're wondering who won. I win.
Thank you very much.
And I have been, and always shall be, David J. Lohr. And that much is true. Feliz Navidad, y'all.
It's coming from inside the show.